Welcome to the Blue Security Podcast, a weekly podcast for information security defenders, where we bring you discussions on best practices, tools, and implementation for enterprise security. Now, here are your hosts for today's show, Andy Jha and Adam Brewer.
Welcome to another episode of the Blue Security Podcast. I'm Andy, your host.
I'm Adam, your co-host.
The FBI released its 2023 Internet Crime Report recently, and there was some really interesting information in here. So we'll talk about it briefly and then kind of break down one of the things, which is going to be our topic for this evening, which is business email compromise. But as part of the Internet Crimes Report, some of the statistics I found that were interesting were there was a 22% increase from 2022 to 2023 in the amount of money that was paid towards internet crimes, or lost, so to speak, towards internet crimes. In 2022, it was $10.3 billion, and in 2023, it was $12.5 billion. There was also an increase in the number of complaints by 10%, from 800-some thousand in 2022 to about 880,000 in 2023. And that's important, too, because not all cyber crimes get reported. And so part of it, you kind of maybe got to take with a grain of salt, because yes, there was an increase, which probably is also representative of an increase in cyber crimes, but also the fact that people are starting to feel more comfortable reporting these. And so we're getting more data, which is good. One of the pieces of data that I found was interesting as well is the age group. Out of all the complaints that could be sorted into an age group, not all the complaints were able to be sorted into an age group because sometimes they come from a business or something like that. But of the ones that could be sorted into an age group, almost 25% of them, a quarter of them, were from the 60 plus age group, which kind of shows you how vulnerable older adults are to cybercrime. As part of the report, there were many types of cybercrime, but one of the ones that were highlighted and kind of the top ones were investment crime, business email compromise, or BEC, and tech support. And investment crimes are just more like cryptocurrency, or, you know, putting having someone invest into a portfolio, and then when they try to withdraw the money, it's not really there anymore. It's some sort of fake investment firm. Business email compromise, which we'll get into later, is where businesses are tricked into giving money into scammers. And then tech support, that's the old tried and true method of, hey, there's something wrong with your computer, give me some money and I'll fix it. So those are the biggest ones. And some of the numbers to me were pretty staggering. In 2023, the business email compromise scams resulted in over $2.9 billion in losses from 21,489 complaints, which roughly equates to about $135,000 per complaint, which that number tracks to me, because actually I was part of a company that was scammed using a business email compromise. And I'm not going to give any details into how it was done, but money was lost, and it wasn't a ton of money. Like, it didn't put the company under, but it was a significant chunk in somewhere around this ballpark, right? $100,000 to $200,000, $300,000. And that comes strictly right off the top of your profits, right? And so that number tracks to me. And, you know, based on the number of complaints, that resulted in a lot of money, almost $3 billion over the last year. Investment fraud was by far the biggest one. That was $4.5 billion. That's individuals and, of course, businesses. So, you know, probably individuals. And again, if you think about how much you're investing, if people have money to invest, that could easily be a few hundred thousand dollars. And all of a sudden, those are all gone. So that one, and then some notable other ones: enterprise data breach at $534 million in losses, personal data breach at $744 million in losses, and then ransomware was not as high as I thought it was going to be, only $59 million in the big scheme of things, which is not a small chunk, but I think if you maybe look at remediation, you know, maybe this is just the amount of money that companies paid, but not necessarily the amount of money that was lost due to a breach of some sort. And so in payments, only $59 million, I guess. But I think as a result of a breach and remediation, there's probably other costs associated with it.
Starting with the last thing you said first, was shocked as well as you went through the data that ransomware was such a small number. So I wonder if that in some way is underreported here. Although usually when major corporations have a ransomware scenario, they always mention they've alerted the FBI. So I feel like the FBI is usually in the loop on these, which would make me think the data is accurate. It is just shocking. You talked about the average dollar amount tracking. I will say the age group, now that 25% of complaints that could be sorted by age group are coming from those 60 and older. You don't have to spend a lot of time on Facebook to see folks in this age group posting things that indicate they have no conceptual understanding of Facebook's business model or how it works, and think that posting the disclaimer on your Facebook status somehow alters the user agreement or EULA with Facebook. And I don't mean to go on a tangent, but it's very simple. Andy, you and I both work for Microsoft, and Microsoft is often the victim of a lot of these fake tech support scams you mentioned here, where it'll claim to be someone from Microsoft needs money now, or your computer's going to stop working. I have had elderly people in my life fall victim to these scams while they know I work for Microsoft, and they have fallen victim to them without even asking me about it. And it just goes on to show that it's very possible to extract money, unfortunately, from elderly folks and anyone over 60, just because there's less of an understanding in how technology works and how it functions and the business models of things and all of that. So overall, other than the ransomware data sounding odd, everything else tracks here. And even the growth rate feels roughly proportionate, which this is significant growth. This is about 20% year over year on an already large number. So I think overall data, we can put a fair amount of weight behind and an agreement with moving forward. So we can use these as kind of a baseline comparison as we continue to talk about this.
So as I was going through this report and looking at some of these numbers, business email compromise was one of the things that stood out to me. And we've somewhat touched on business email compromise as part of the Microsoft security report that comes out. There's a whole section that talks about it. But I realized we never really did a deep dive on our show. So tonight we're going to talk about it. What is exactly business email compromise? It's essentially, you know, like I mentioned before, where scammers will use email to trick someone at your company into giving money is generally the thing, or maybe divulging confidential information. How they get into that is generally, again, the vector is usually email, but it could be some sort of malware or identity compromise. Either way, they're going to have access to either your email or somebody else's email to do some surveillance, essentially, to look at patterns on who you're talking to and the type of language you're using, so that when they try to request money, usually in the form of an invoice, they will know the type of accounts and customers you might be talking to, the way that you talk to your customers and how that is requested, or how companies talk to you and how they request money. And so they kind of get an idea, so that it seems more feasible. Or they will look at the people that you're talking to, like your manager or your boss or your director or the CEO, and try to spoof one of those people into tricking you to send money to a different company based on their request. And so there's a lot of ways on how it can work, but the basics of it is essentially, you know, they get into your email through some sort of vector, either a phishing link, an identity compromise, or malware, and then they do reconnaissance. They look at patterns. They try to win your trust sometimes they'll send little emails at like, for example, my previous company, the email that was compromised over a couple of weeks. And they sent little small emails that no one really noticed to just kind of see if that person would respond. And then eventually you escalate it to, oh, we have an emergency. We need this invoice paid for right now. You got to send a cashier's check to this account number, you know, so on and so forth. So that's the basics. And like I said, there's usually either HR, CEO, you know, finance. Those are the typical ones that are hit with these scams and usually involve some sort of invoice or gift cards even. You know, that has been a method as well to try to scam money.
You talk about how sometimes the scammers will impersonate using a domain that is similar to or close enough to your company name. I have also seen it where they literally just take over the CFO's email account and send an email to somebody in accounting and say, hey, do this thing. And because they have access to both email accounts, or at least the one they need to impersonate, they literally just use the actual email account too. So it doesn't always have to be impersonation. It can actually be account takeover and then just sending unauthorized messages on that person's account. I've seen that as well. So, and those are, I mean, there's no amount of training because it literally is the CFO's email. So I think we'll get into some other ways you can mitigate that, but you got to mitigate that through process more than anything.
Yes, exactly. That's a great call out because yes, a lot of times they try to impersonate, like using a domain that's similar. Like let's say for us, it'd be at Microsoft.com. It might be at Microsoft with a zero, you know, .com. So it looks very similar. All flags that should be recognized when you're looking at phishing emails. But like Adam said, it can literally be the actual email that was compromised, which was the way previous org. We had an internal employee, their email was compromised, and they're the ones that sent, the attackers used our internal email to request an invoice to be sent to their bank account. And so that's pretty difficult to mitigate against. But let's talk about some protection because there's no silver bullet in this case. Let's just get that out of the way. There's no way to say this is the only way and you're never going to get compromised through business email compromise ever again. That's just not something that can happen. We all know that in information security. But
well, I will say in my now 7 years of doing my current role at Microsoft, almost universally, when I do meet with information security teams that have that borderline, we are invincible kind of mindset, they're usually the ones I read about getting popped within a couple, you know, within 6 to 24 months. So yeah. It's a good reminder to always have that mindset of the more we know, the more we don't know. And we realize how imperfect our protections are, but we will keep trying to.
First and foremost, and this should be no surprise, is you should have a secure email gateway like Defender for Office, Proofpoint, Mimecast. You know, maybe it's API based, maybe it's MX record based. I'd recommend a combination of both, but that way you can at least catch the low hanging fruit, as I would call it. The phishing links, the spam, the impersonation, the stuff that is very obvious, that is all part of this machine learning that all of these companies do to try to catch the email before it gets delivered. Pre-delivery protection. And then, of course, you know, some of these also have post-delivery protection, like, for example, with Defender for Office, there's the Zap. The zero access, you know, once it's there, they can zap it out based on machine learning and other threat signals. You have detonation for links, you know, Proofpoint, Mimecast, all of them do that as well. Detonating attachments, those sorts of things. So that's first and foremost. And most companies have something like that. Again, another baseline thing, MFA for all of your accounts. Making email and the account itself harder to compromise. And because this is an email attack, you know, don't just think about your emails that are tagged with a user. shared mailboxes and all sorts of other mailboxes that might have licenses that may not be protected by MFA. You know, I know companies have processes where they send out invoices or emails through some sort of, you know, inbox that is really unmanned. You know, do not reply to this inbox. You know, no one's monitoring it, right? It's just a thing that sends out info at wherever. And so you got to think about those emails, because these attacks, they compromise one account and then they'll laterally move until they get to a point where they get a person that they can then do some reconnaissance on, and then send out, you know, their scam. Educating your employees, you know, they must know what the red flags are for phishing, domain email mismatches, you know, having language in there that doesn't match, requests that are untimely, you know, double check. So you should simulate business email compromise campaigns with your phishing training, and then also have an easy way for users to submit and report incidents, as well as a solution that allows your InfoSec teams to easily review and remediate it. You know, have some sort of automation, a playbook of some sort that might kick off automatically. Okay, let's look for every inbox that has this domain with it, and let's take it out. Email authentication tools, you know, make your emails harder to spoof by authenticating senders using SPF, DKIM, and DMARC. And then have a process or secure platform. I think this is often overlooked and probably one of the most important things when it comes to business email compromise. At the very least, have a process that employees do not deviate from when it comes to sending out money and invoices. Because if they deviate from the process, then that's usually, you know, I have an emergency. This is the invoice that needs to be paid by this time. Okay, well, we have a standard process for that, right? It's like 5 to 7 business days. This is how the check gets cut. It's got to be signed off by the CFO, whoever, whatever your process is, have checks and double checks throughout the process. Or maybe you have an actual system, which there are out there, that are specifically designed to authenticate payments in this manner. So have a process, don't deviate it. If it requires deviation, you know, maybe you have multiple high level managers sign off on it before it has to go out. And then finally, business email compromise is not just about emails. Like we talked about here, it's about identity. It's about endpoints. It could be SaaS apps that have, you know, vulnerabilities. So make sure that your solutions that are protecting all of these other things are integrated so that your security defenders have a holistic view of your entire organization's threat footprint. It just makes it easier to detect this sort of thing and respond a lot quicker.
One of the things you talked about with having that process and never deviate from it, no matter how big of an emergency it is, or if there is a deviation for an emergency, requires multiple sign-offs, maybe verbal in nature. One of the interesting things about that is going back to the training portion you spoke of. Dead giveaway of any of these things is that unnatural sense of urgency and that desire to break from process. That should be a red flag that actually, instead of forces you to run faster, makes you slow down and says, wait a minute, this feels off. Let's dig into this more. Even though the person is saying faster, faster, must go faster, that's when you actually slow down and double check, because that just doesn't seem right. And everyone who works at this company knows this process is so standardized and so formalized, and we just do not send a payment without these checks and balances in place. So I think of all of that comes back to, and it's really important to do a lot of that behavioral training. I think from a technology perspective, you hit all the highlights. Obviously, you need a next generation email security solution. Agree that it needs to be more than just catching stuff that flows through your MX record. You need to have the ability to dip back into mailboxes after the fact, do that 0-hour auto purge or zap you talked about. MFA is table stakes. MFA should be on all the time for every authentication, not just a sometimes thing. It's an all the time thing. And you should be using models that are not peppering your users with MFA prompts, of course, so you don't have the fatigue problem. I love your call out on non-human mailboxes and non-human identities. Obviously, huge amount of risk there. And so you need to use the tools your platform has to help protect non-human identities as well and make sure they are hardened and protected and you're alerted to any anomalous behavior with them. If that mailbox is unmonitored, then you should have auditing rules set up like in your SIM that if somebody's accessing emails in that mailbox, that should set off like huge warning lights. It should essentially be a honeypot. Because if it's unmonitored, then it should be unmonitored. So if somebody's monitoring it, essentially your honeypot level alerts on it. It should go crazy. I think you touched on everything else, like really, really sound here. It's defense in depth. Like everything in cybersecurity today, there is no one silver bullet, but the more you can line up the pieces of Swiss cheese with the different holes in them, you can make it to the point that there isn't a clear path through. And that's where we're trying to get to. With all of this is to create through defense in depth a series of security solutions that can help protect against these really determined attackers. And why are they determined? Because they made billions of dollars off of this in the calendar year 2023, according to the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation. So there's motivation for sure. And where there's motivation, there's going to be a desire to find a way to do it. And the cat and mouse game continues, but we have some pretty good tools in place today through training and through technology to really not make this go away, but maybe make it less of a problem and maybe to catch it before a huge payment gets authorized, maybe a smaller one, where someone finally gets the light bulb that goes off and says, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here?
And one final thought, if this does happen to you, you know, hopefully with some of these protections that we've talked about, it doesn't. But ultimately, if it does and you get scammed, one of your best resources is the FBI and CISA. Like, make sure you know who your cyber crimes FBI liaison is in the area. There's one for every single state. So you can reach out to the FBI and there is someone who is in charge of cybercrime. Sometimes they don't do any type of investigation unless it exceeds a certain dollar amount, but there are other avenues for you to try to recoup that or investigate it. And if it is over a certain dollar amount, I mean, the FBI has successfully frozen assets where these payments have gone to, and not in a small amount. They've done quite a bit to essentially lock down the payments and recoup those costs that have been paid out. And so make sure that you're reporting it. You know, it's really hard to recoup it yourself if you're not involving official channels like law enforcement. So make sure you're doing that.
That's a great call out. I think in general, one of the areas our industry needs to pivot is from treating this as a nuisance and instead to treat it as, and potentially international crime, potentially as aggressive behavior from other nation states, potentially. So we need to really pivot our mindset and our approach around this to align more of that and less of this is just a nuisance preventing me from doing my business. This is just noise in the system. No, this is determined threat actors or cyber criminals who are either trying to make money or trying to damage your business, maybe for just personal gain, but maybe for actual gamesmanship in the international community. So we all need to get comfortable with treating these as the crimes they really are.
And obviously, Adam and I are based in the U.S., and so we know our process here. In the report, it actually has some incidents, complaints that were filed from international countries. And so there are countries and incidents that happen that get reported to the FBI. And so FBI is one way to do if you're outside the U.S., but also, you know, your local law enforcement or whoever is in charge of this sort of thing. And obviously, we're not experts on your particular law enforcement outside of the United States, but there's usually some sort of equivalent. So make sure that you're reporting because the international community is trying to crack down on these, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's our show for this week. Thanks for watching and listening as always. Our contact information will be in the show notes if you have any questions or topics you want us to talk about in the future. Thanks. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to the Blue Security Podcast. Please check out the show notes, catch up on episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Find Andy on Twitter @AJawZero and Adam @AJBrewer. See you at our next episode.